Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:35 PM, that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is May 2nd. And we've had a very impressive rally in the last hour of trading on Wall Street, where the Dow Jones tacked on almost 1,000 points. And it had already been up a few hundred points for most of the day, ebbing and flowing, but certainly there was a significant chunk of new demand came in the last hour of trading. Now, if we then go and look at that and what that looks like on a weekly basis, we had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend last week. And subsequently, we've had this bounce in here today. It is not every day that the Dow Jones puts on 5%. So that is about as big an upward dynamic as anyone might wish for, and it suggests a low of at least near-term significance. Now, when we look at the NASDAQ, we've had an equally impressive rebound, and it started on Friday, and that is bouncing pretty emphatically now from the region of the trend mean. The semiconductors index has also bounced from the region of the trend mean, and that is despite the fact, for example, that microchip technologies announced in here today that they're going to have an impact from the coronavirus on their earnings. But the argument, I think, would be that that's already in the price. There are, I think, two ways of looking at the kind of action we've seen. There is, let's just simply go through what we've actually seen. So the first is that back in 2018, we had a very abrupt pullback, and that was just about a 20% decline, and it scared a significant number of people. And there were very few were ready for the kind of impressive rebound we got in January of 2019. I don't think there was anybody willing to predict that the market would have regained all of the decline within 3 months. And I don't think there was anybody was willing to make that prediction on Friday either, that the market would have regained all of the decline put in last week within the next 3 months. The news from about the coronavirus is getting worse, and the spread of the virus internationally is still trending higher. I think it is important to pay attention to the growth rate. It's not about the absolute number of cases. It's about the growth rate in the number of cases. That does appear to be declining in China, but it is still rising internationally. I will go and talk about China in a moment, but I want to come back to the S&P 500. So there are two ways of looking at this. The first is that we've had a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and the index has now come back into the region of the trend mean. It pulled back violently below it last week, and it has regained it in here today. In order for this to be a top formation, it would have to encounter resistance in the region of the trend mean. So that would suggest that it would have to fall back tomorrow. If we get upside follow through tomorrow, then 3,000 is going to be a big psychological level where we can anticipate support coming through in future. If we get a higher reaction low, then we are back in a demand-dominated environment. Now, I said there was two ways of looking at it. The first is that the size of the downward dynamic is going to be deleterious to sentiment. It is going to encourage people to stand on the sidelines, that people will have been stopped out, and they will be rather hesitant about getting putting money back into the market. There will also be people who are buy the dip conditioned. The number one strategy that has worked and will always work in a secular bull market is to buy the dip. And that's what we saw in here today. People came in and said, this is a significant dip. It's a 10% pullback. Every other time the market has pulled back in the region of 10%, it has been a buying opportunity. So that's what they're doing. They're buying, and we had a lot of evidence of that in the last hour of trading. So the potential is that we're going to see a further rebound for an additional reason. This is the other way of looking at the market. In normal circumstances, with that kind of pullback, we would see a ranging phase take place because there would be a war going on between supply and demand. On this occasion, I think that is perhaps a 50-50 bet. I don't think that this is going to be enough to create a top formation completion, but that is still open to question. What I think instead is going to be the defining characteristic of the market is the actions of quantitative traders. The computers generally now control about 80% of volume, and a point I've made repeatedly in the past is that you can have a computer make any kind of decision on what to buy, but there are very few ways of programming a computer to decide how much to buy. And the higher the VIX goes, the greater the potential is that the quantitative strategies will have to reduce the size of their positions. So that's, I think, a rather important consideration. Now, when we then think about the VIX index, it got all the way up to 50, and over the course of the last 20 years, every single time it has got up to 50, it has been a buying opportunity. So that does suggest that there is potential here that it is not going to exceed 50 and it is going to start coming back down, and that we're going to see at least a range form, but potentially that the swing from the extremely accelerated move we had into bonds is going to reverse, and that there is now potential that this very wide overextension and overbought condition on the bond market is going to be unwound. That would result in the VIX coming back down. It would also result in a significant pop back on the upside for the major stock markets. Now, when we then think about the yield differential, there is a clear incentive here to look at the relative comparison, where you can now get an 80 basis point pickup on equities versus bonds. And this is the widest we've seen this spread get to in years. In fact, you have to go all the way back to 2008 in order to really see that the spread has got anywhere close to 100 basis points. So we're at the widest point since at least 2008. Of course, we're at a very different condition today versus where stocks were in 2008. And the simple rationale for that is we've had incredible monetary and fiscal stimulus and inflation of asset prices in between those two dates. And with the continued efforts of central banks to support the market, I think the scenario that needs to be explored is the coronavirus is serious. It is something that is going to have a negative impact on global growth. And that is a very real threat. And the extent of the hysteria that is mounting is, I think, greater than anything that we've seen previously. I do remember the hysteria around the SARS virus, and I think we're at least on a par with that, except that the situation is somewhat more serious. The greatest risk is to elderly people. What is particularly interesting is that young children have not been infected seriously to nearly the same extent as elderly people. But because of the virus's unique characteristics and the way it attacks the respiratory system, it puts people under duress if they are elderly or if they have pre-existing respiratory conditions, such as smoking or potentially diabetes. Unfortunately, diabetes is the kind of ailment that leaves one susceptible to a whole range of additional infections. Well, that is obviously a problem, and it is something that is going to require a significant deployment of resources in order to tackle. What I think, however, and this is the scenario I think we need to explore, is that the challenge it represents is not as large as 2008, but the response to it will be. So we're going to see a significant move to cut interest rates, and not in one country, but that it is quite likely we're going to see a unified front in an attempt to cut interest rates right across the board, whether that is in the USA, Canada, Australia, Europe, the UK, and a whole swathe of the emerging markets, we're going to see interest rates cut. And obviously, China being the epicenter of the problem is giving us an example of what to potentially expect. So the CSI 300 has rebounded, and it was up about 3% in here today, and it is now solidifying above the trend mean on the CSI 300. JD.com came through with its estimates for growth in here today, and it was up about 10%, because they anticipate that their business is going to rebound, and of course they're an online seller, so they should be doing well when people are quarantined and can't go to brick-and-mortar stores. When you think about how has TAL Education been doing, again, this is another company that benefits when people can't go to school, and the share continues to hold in a pretty impressive uptrend. When we then think about what's going on in Europe, well, the outbreak is certainly starting to have an effect there. It certainly pulled back to the lower side of its range in terms of the Euro stocks. I think it is quite likely we're going to see a bounce in here tomorrow. When we then think about the Euro, the unwinding of carry trades was a significant factor in the strength of the euro over the course of the last few days. Potentially now also, because the Federal Reserve is certainly deemed to be likely to cut interest rates aggressively, and potentially more aggressively than Europe, and not least because they have more room in which to cut interest rates. That's I think an interesting point too for the British pound, which is down now to about 127. It has certainly sustained the move below 130. There is scope for additional downside because it looks likely that the UK will join the ranks of other central banks in cutting interest rates. When we think about what is that doing in terms of the government bond yields, we've had an aggressive move on the downside. Two-year gilt yields have been ranging above 0% now since 2012. The kind of monetary and fiscal stimulus that is being prepared for the global economy is, I think, really on par with anything we've seen in the last decade, and it is likely to have a beneficial effect on asset prices generally. If central banks start re-engaging with quantitative easing, it is going to put, it has historically put downward pressure on prices, and yields have in fact risen because of the inflationary bias that it creates. Then of course we have the fact that gold prices pulled back rather sharply last week and were pretty much unchanged in here today. But I do think it is likely that gold is going to hold its breakout, that the worst case scenario is that we're going to have a process of mean reversion. Any solution that comes through is going to represent an effort to devalue the purchasing power of currencies. So I think that's a very significant factor. When we then think about the oil price, then it accelerated on the downside over the course. Oops, I'm not hitting the right buttons in here. It accelerated on the downside and bounced in here today with a meaningful pop on the upside. This is a large upside key reversal, and it suggests that we have a low now of at least near-term significance. It's confirming support in the region of the lower side of the range. It doesn't mean, of course, that the pressure that's come to bear on a significant number of the highly levered providers of crude oil, particularly in the shale sector, are going to experience a renaissance just yet. But it is certainly some evidence, at least, that the oversold condition relative to the trend mean is likely to be unwound. We also had a meaningful pop on the upside for ExxonMobil, and this is following through on the upward dynamic we had on Friday. The share is currently yielding 6.5%, we've definitely seen a significant run on some of these high-yield energy companies. Royal Dutch Shell is also looking likely to unwind its oversold condition, and that one yields 8.5% at the current levels. What I also find particularly interesting has been how much of a stalwart renewable sector has been. The solar ETF, for example, did pull back last week, but it has so far held the majority of the advance and still remains in a reasonably consistent advance overall. I think the clear potential for lower interest rates, the need to increase the investment in all kinds of utility infrastructure, not only because a lot of the existing infrastructure is aging, but also because we need more of it, that is likely to benefit the renewable sector, not least because they're increasingly competitive without the need for subsidies. But of course, the solar sector continues to benefit from the subsidies, particularly, for example, with California mandating that every new house has to have solar panels. When we look at the condition in China, where they've suspended payments on debt, they have basically suspended any kind of defaults. They are introducing helicopter money in Hong Kong and providing every permanent resident with 10,000 Hong Kong dollars. These are incredible measures to stoke economic activity. It's the very essence of helicopter money. Then when we look at Europe, Italy has been given the green light for a fiscal stimulus. Of course, that is going to break the fiscal compact within the Union, and this is a perfect example of Europe's don't ask, don't tell way of creating rules and then ignoring them. But the reality is that we're going to get fiscal stimulus coming through in Europe. There is obviously then the potential that the Federal Reserve is going to continue to it's going to cut interest rates and potentially re-engage with quantitative easing. So these, I think, are really quite important developments. When we then think about what is likely in the commodity producers, they are caught between the argument that there's going to be less demand for the commodities versus the potential that we're going to get asset price inflation as a result of the stimulus that's coming down the line. So the Bovespa index in Brazil has bounced from the region of the 100,000 level and is coming back towards the region of the trend mean. When we then think about what's going on with palladium, the price got all the way down to the $2,400 area, and it was marginally off that low in here today. This is the largest pullback we've seen in at least a year. It is now right in the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. If it pulls back into it, that will be the first clear failed upside break. The acceleration and the larger pullback are both inconsistencies for what has been an incredibly consistent advance. Well, that is likely to act as a headwind for the platinum sector, which our mining sector, which has been the primary producer of palladium as a byproduct, and the index there did not do a great job of rebounding in here today. Obviously, a lot of people are worried about the potential that the coronavirus is going to create a recession. What we would need to be, I think, particularly alert to is the trajectory of the yield curve spread. Historically, it's usually been when central banks panic and introduce emergency measures, cutting interest rates, that investors take flight. And usually, when that happens, it results in the yield curve spread surging higher through 50 basis points. Well, we haven't seen that today. There is still the potential that this yield spread will continue to range rather than trend. But if it sustains a move back up and through the 50 basis point level, particularly in a dynamic fashion, then that will be a suggestion that the market is pricing in the imminent risk of recession. I think that it is 50-50 at the moment that they will be able to act in a timely manner as needed to avoid a recession, but it is definitely going to result in our the coronavirus is definitely going to result in a more difficult economic environment and the potential that we're going to see a hit to consumer spending. So the yield curve spread is something we need to monitor, and joblessness is another. And when we look at that 4-week moving average for joblessness, it has been trending down for a decade, sideways for 2 years. If it sustains a break on the upside, and most particularly if it is trending through 250, then we would, I think, have clear evidence that a pronounced slowdown is occurring, and then we would, I think, have to start pricing in the potential for a recession. But so far, that is just not the case. So I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.